Stay hungry, stay foolish.
So now on the Innovation Show, we welcome Aidan Connolly, CEO and founder of Itero Analytics. Welcome to the show, Aidan.
Thanks, Aidan.
I saw a blog post you wrote, which was fantastic, about having a chief data dictator. And I thought it was brilliant. And I thought your mindset was excellent and very authentic and true. And it would be great to talk to you about analytics. But before we go there, let's talk about you and how you set up the company, etc., what your background was.
Sure. Okay. Well, the company was set up 13 years ago now. At the time, I was working in Vodafone Ireland. And as you can imagine, in a telecoms company, you have a lot of data. And telecoms was doing very, very well at the time. And they didn't have massive commercial pressure on them to extract all the value from that data. But I was reading some papers independently of my own, figured out that there was additional value that could be extracted from the telecoms data, particularly in the whole context of what's called social network analysis, analyzing social groups within large customer data sets. So I was going to go back to university actually to do a master's on that. And when I went to the university, they said they're very interested. They'd like a bit of the IP. So then I just had a chat with Enterprise Ireland. They said, that's very interesting. We'd be interested in funding that. And then I decided I better set up a company rather than go back to college. And that's
brilliant.
How it started.
And when was so 13 years ago?
13 years ago,
oh,
yeah.
Brilliant.
Been through the wars up and down since.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's been great. It's been a fantastic experience. So
just before the recession. But your mind was in the right place.
Yeah, well, I think so. I think we were, in many ways, we were right to do what we did. But we perhaps were too early in many ways, you know. And as they say, it's the early bird gets the worm, but the second mouse gets the cheese. And I think we could have waited a year or two and would still have done quite well.
I know, you see this a lot. And I wrote a blog post recently called the Cassandra curse. And it's the curse of the real innovator who's too early. And I suppose that not doing it as well, you probably would have went on a different tangent somewhere else. And it's just having enough runway to get there until the world catches up with you almost.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is so true. And I think, you know, when you set up your own company, it's not for the money. Of course, money is important. We all need money to live. But there's many other motivating factors for setting up a company. And you fall in love with your idea. This is the whole thing, I suppose, that VCs live off, you know, the founder's passion for their company. And, you know, you work night and day, you go without salary, you sacrifice everything. And so you don't normally make a rational decision. And you say, well, I shall wait for 2 years until some other companies have come along, made some mistakes, and I'll learn from them. People don't normally act like that.
And how do you sell that at home? Like, I mean, that's the challenge I always see. Like, so selling that at home with a family is a tough one.
Oh, it is very tough. I mean, now at the time I was single.
Okay.
But I got great support from my family for that. And subsequently I'm married and my wife is very, very supportive.
Brilliant.
You know, so, but it is difficult at times. I think at the end of the month, you know, salaries are paid and they have to be paid. And that's your concern, you know, and you're trying to grow your business and, you know, we've come through a very severe recession as well. And, you know, keeping the lights on and trying to grow your business at the same time is a challenge and you need support and it's great when you get it.
And because it's something you see with big companies that they don't know pain. So they don't, there's no burning platform. And you have a burning platform every month in that I have to pay these people who have bought into my company and bought into the vision.
Yeah.
And I need to pay them first and then I'll look after myself. And that's a very difficult place to be.
Absolutely. It's so, so different. I mean, big companies, and this is, I suppose, well, where you have a disconnect. You know, if you speak to somebody from a big company and they'll say, well, why don't you do a marketing campaign or open up an office in Singapore? And you say, with what?
Yeah.
You know, I'm focusing now on, you know, existing During the recession. That's like many Irish companies were just focusing on existing. So big companies, I think, struggle to understand the challenges facing small companies. I remember at the time, it was like 2010, 2011, like there was a big company who, an American company, they're a massive, massive company. I won't name them. And they owed us money, which accounted for around 30% of our turnover for that year. And they waited 12 months to pay us.
That's what I just find absolutely disgusting. And there's another thing that I see, and it's the feedback loop. So you're engaged by a big company as a small company. And I'm sure we've so many startups and small companies and SMEs in the digital space that listen to the show. And they'll all agree here because I've seen it where they'll go, oh, we need this project urgently and we need a proposal by next Friday. Everybody scrambles, drops other work they're on or works very, very late nights and affecting the home life, all those kind of things. And then they don't respond for 4 to 6 weeks or longer or else go on holidays and go, oh, yeah, I'm going on holidays. Thanks for doing that and getting it in on time. It's amazing this that you see this so much because I suppose everybody needs a dose of what reality is to understand how to manage suppliers as well. Because I've never seen a company I work with as a supplier. I see them as a partner because that's the best, that you get the best results from that. But let's move on because we talked about that and the authenticity of your post and your mindset because that came across because the other factor of all this is the big companies will get you into the project and then not do anything with it.
Yes.
Like and that for me is just painful to see that wastage, but also the wasted opportunities, the opportunity cost as well as the financial cost and the time cost that they just want to almost put lipstick on a pig and go, here's the project the way we see it and then not implement anything.
Yes, that's it. Very common problem. I think, you know, the cost of not seeing something through is a lot less for them than it is for small companies. And we've seen it time and time again where big companies will invest money in starting a project and then they won't see it through to the end or they won't see it through in the optimum fashion. And it's like somebody's ticking a box and so that they can report at the end of the year, I did project X or Y. But from our perspective, and particularly because we're a data-driven, we're an analytical company, we always say, well, measure it, quantify it. You know, how good was it? Where can it be improved? And some companies, no, it's fine, you know, and they don't know where their money is going. And, you know, you think from a shareholder point of view, if you were a shareholder in those companies, you'd say, well, it's clear they're not operating to their full capacity or full capabilities, but I guess in big companies you can hide a bit.
Yeah, and that's, the wastage you see of people in companies. And it must be difficult for some people in there as well who are trying to actually affect change and have to deal with this baggage, essentially, and carrying teammates. Oh, yeah. But, like, I've seen this as well, Aidan, where, you know, it's coming in and tick the box, but it's also the wrong person managing. So the wrong client. So you sign up the client being a brand or whoever that is, but then they put the wrong team on it and that team don't know what you're doing. So you as the analytics company have to train them and all they're trying to do is soak up the jargon, as much jargon as they can and go back to the company and tell the company about the jargon rather than actually go, okay, I totally accept I'm not the smartest person in the room. That's brilliant because that's what you want. That's why you're hiring the expert. And then the expert hold your hand through the implementation is a much better way of doing it, instead of just masking the fact that you don't know and you're trying to tell your boss a little bit of jargon so the boss might go, all right, they know what they're talking about. It's all in safe hands. And it all just tumbles down.
Absolutely. I think that is a common problem. If you have somebody assigned to your project who wasn't involved in bringing you on board in the first place, it's a warning light that goes off. And then there is also an issue, particularly in tech, that because you often have to deal with the tech teams internally. And if it's not invented here, if they didn't build it, there is not always. I mean, there's lots of companies who are open to bring in outside technology, but there are also companies who are just resentful of bringing in any innovation, you know, bringing in people who should be brighter than them in that topic for that domain. And that can be a challenge, you know, and I guess you learn over the years, you know, and try to get all people on board, but it's a challenge. It's more a psychological and a selling challenge rather than a technical challenge to win over a whole team so you can successfully implement your project.
Yeah, because you can see sometimes where a CEO might dictate, and I use that word based on your blog, they might dictate this needs to happen. And then the middle management go, yeah, sure. And then they don't, like they do the bare minimum to peter it along so that it actually fails. And then they go, yeah, well, we told you it wouldn't work. Yeah. Or the other thing, like, let's talk about this, is some people don't want to be measured.
Oh, yeah.
So they don't want to show what the optimum workflows should be, what the optimum traffic to a website should be, where they should be focusing on a website, what's working, what's not. Like, we live in a world where this is available in real time, where you can make real time decisions, and people do not like that. They don't like being measured. And I often think of, you know, when you get stopped at a drink driving stop, no matter if you've had a drink or not, if you've not had a drink, you're kind of still going, oh, shoot, I don't like being tested here.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, you have that kind of element the whole time. But how do you deal with that, Aidan?
Yeah, well, you know, as I said, like, people don't like being measured, but yet what gets measured gets done. And it's a difficult one because sometimes politics comes into it, you know. So let's say if the CEO dictates that X must happen, and then as it's passed down to people who report into him or her, do you get this kind of passive aggressive behavior where people say yes, and then they slowly kill the project, or if there's something negative, they highlight that so that they can say, look, they're not the right company, I told you it wasn't going to work. But getting executive sponsorship is key. I think we learned this the hard way in our early days. You know, we sell to the innovator within the organization.
The early adopter, yeah.
And he or she, they'd be great, really, you know, full of enthusiasm for your project, but they didn't have the senior management support. And we learned the hard way, you know. Sure, go in via the innovator, the early adopter, but get him or her to introduce you to the people who make the decisions, who sign off on the check, and who can be the difference between success and failure of your project. Get them on board, and then you have a much better chance. Because without that senior management team support, I think ultimately, you know, all projects will fail. You have to get it.
It's funny because it wasn't until I read your blog that I realized that it's the same thing, whether it's digital transformation, whether it's analytics or data-driven companies, or it's innovation programs, or any kind of transformation from the status quo, it all involves, it's the same formula. It's senior management support, finding a few early adopters and dedicated clients within the company who'll drive it and make sure that it keeps going and get around the obstacles for you internally, politically, or bureaucratically, all those kind of obstacles. And then that frees you up to do your work. But it's such a challenge. And for you to, like, I really have to credit you for lasting so long through all the days, the early days. So the 13 years, the first, like, if you think about it, it's only really in the last 2 years that data-driven, you hear a lot more talk about data-driven companies and data-driven whatever it might be, because, and big data. It's kind of really only come to the fore.
That's right, yeah.
And you've had enough runway to get you there, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the fact that we survived and grew means that we've got a lot of experience. You know, you've got the successes, but you also have your war wounds and the hard lessons that you learn along the way. And I think, look, it's probably a challenge that faces all tech companies. They start off so much focusing on the tech, but at the end of the day, you have to sell it. And then, you know, not only do you have to sell it to somebody who signs a check, but you also have to sell it to those end users and the people who can make it happen internally. And that's difficult, you know, sometimes. But I suppose, you know, as you said, the past couple of years, there's been a big movement in our domain in analytics and big data. So now we find there's a massive appetite for the sort of services we provide, which is great. But sometimes the appetite is, well, I need to do this because everybody else is doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure why.
It's like I need an app, and then there's all these zombie apps in the app store.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, and it's, or, you know, even in earlier days, like people, putting up websites. So I didn't know why they were putting up websites and what they were hoping to gain from them. And there's a little bit of that with analytics.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, if somebody's willing to put, most companies, organizations have data that can be used to improve the overall performance. So it won't be a waste investment if they see it through. And that's the big issue, if they see it through.
Yeah. And but during that period, you must have created some IP that you might be interested in.
Well, I suppose when we started the company, we focused on developing what's called algorithms, which are really very specialized techniques for extracting value from data. And we've built on that over the years. And recently, we launched a product which is called Red Squirrel, which is an open source big data solution, which we're very excited about because, as we discussed, you know, the movement in it towards big data and analytics is really accelerated in the past couple of years. But also the movement in open source software is becoming a commodity. And we think we're in the right place at the right time, fortunately, for a change.
Brilliant.
And not too early this time.
Yeah.
So we're quite excited about it. And hopefully that will become the bedrock of our business in the years ahead.
Fantastic. And let's talk about that chief data dictator that you talked about in your blog post. And so you've talked about kind of within the company from a helicopter view, what needs to happen, but hiring a person then that needs to be the person in the company that is the data dictator. Yes. And the characteristics of that person. Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question because while it might appear like a tech role, really, it's a role that's all about people. So the idea of the data dictator is that he or she should drive the organization in a way so that the decisions made for the organization, by the organization, are based on data, not on gut feeling, not what the CEO says, or not what they call, is it the hippo effect, which is the highest paid person in the room. It should be based on data. And many organizations still need to go down that road of using data to make empirical decisions based on fact. And that requires somebody to liaise with management. And look, let's be honest, most companies' management are, you know,
not born into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is like I often, you know, you often get angry about that. You know, I did in the early days, and then I just accept and go, you know, it's not their fault. The fault is not the age you're born into, but the fault is trying to mask it or trying to, like we talked about, hide the fact that you're not the smartest person in the room. Accept that, because that's how you get better.
Exactly.
And sorry, I interrupted you.
No, you're right. But, you know, if you are bringing somebody into the room who's smarter than you, then you're doing a good job.
That's it.
You know, because that's your job. I mean, and that's where, I mean, I look at it, I think organizations vary a lot with their management, but they need to embrace the fact that, look at the way we did things in the past, the Mad Men way of doing business is not appropriate. You need to look at data. And we see this actually in a number of our clients who have really over the past couple of years have begun to transform themselves, and every decision is based on data. And it's it makes it a lot clearer because there's far less pet projects, far fewer pet projects going on. There's far less favoritism that can be justified because everything gets measured.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's better for everyone. And like, if you know, look, I'm going to be measured on my performance, not on whether, you know, I'm a good crack in the Christmas party or whatever, or I play golf with the boss. You know, if I'm just getting measured on my performance, well, then I think it evens the playing field for everyone, you know, and I think that's a good thing.
There's one last thing to talk about, and I thought, you know, Red Squirrel, I'm delighted for you that you've lasted to get to the point and create the IP. But there's a beautiful world coming for people who deal in analytics like Itero, and that is the world of an API-driven economy. So we had Paul Rowan, author of PSD2 and Plain English, on the show, and that's the payment service derivative 2 in the banking world, where they have to open up their APIs to companies so that there's more competition, etc., in the world. So that means that companies need to get their data in order. So they need to get it into Lego chunks so it's being accessible by machines more and more. And that's a, and we're moving towards that.
Absolutely.
World, whether you're a publisher whether you're any type of company that deals in data, like you said, telecoms, etc. This world is coming very, very fast, because in a world of AI, AI can do a lot of the work for you, the rote tasks, etc.
Yeah.
So it's, how do you feel about, like, I mean, are you kind of going to hurry up and come this world?
Yeah, no, it's funny you say that, but it's something that we talk a lot about internally, because, you know, when you see like a business grew by 25% for us last year, it's probably going to grow around 50% this year. And you think, is this just a fad? And then you think, well, look, actually, there's so much data being produced and it's growing exponentially, and people are, the world is becoming far more connected. So this is not a fad. This is not a bubble for us. We don't see it as a bubble. We see that this is the way the world is going to go. And as you say, AI is going to become very much part of that mix, where an awful lot of decisions will be made for us intelligently, automatically, but based on good data.
Yeah, and it all leads to better productivity. I mean, when you have that AI doing that work for you, the rote tasks, you're working less in the business and more on the business and where it's going, the direction, etc.
Absolutely, and I think that's the real advantage. I think the world is going to be so transformed in the next 20 to 30 years. We can't imagine how it will, but the use of AI and an interconnected world will transform how we live. I do think it might have implications for the more mundane jobs, but I suppose that would push us all to be a bit more creative.
Yeah.
But it should lead, I would think, to better quality of life and more productivity. And
yeah, and a safer world.
Safer, actually. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Less human error.
Yes, absolutely.
And one last question, because I thought, firstly, Idero, what does the name signify?
Oh yeah, it's a good question. It's based on the Irish word idir, which means between, because we started off, as I said, doing what's called social network analysis, which is about analysing relationships between people. And look, we wanted a URL that had a small number of letters. Idir wasn't available, so we added on an O, and it's Idero, and we stuck with it ever since, you know. And yeah, that's where its origin comes from. But we do a lot more than just social network analysis now.
Yeah. And then, I saw you speak at an event that you put on with Alternatives, which was a fantastic event in the Shelburne.
Yeah, thank you.
And I asked the question because I was actually genuinely asking this like question. So if I'm a company and I'm going, I have the confidence to go, I don't have a clue where to start. Where does one start?
That's a really good question. I think we formulated an answer for that question over time. You know, it wasn't one that kind of jumped out at us. And what I would say now to companies is, look, if you're starting, right, probably the first thing you need to do is just to do an assessment of what do you have and where do you want to go? So it's no tech involved, you know, it's just people, just understanding what sort of data are you gathering? What are your business objectives? And then to try to roadmap out how you can get there. And okay, then you might talk about tech, then you might talk about data. But initially, what you need to do is just do an audit of what it is you have and align that with your business objectives. And then you take from there. Then you start talking about tech and data, but that's how you start.
So say I'm if I look at my data sets at the moment, I have social media, social media interactions, what people are talking about, what they're not talking about.
Yes.
My Google. So I'm just thinking at a very basic level, I have Google Analytics because it, you know, it comes as standard. And then depending on the company I am, if I'm a telco, I have a hell of a lot more. But if I'm a standard, SME, mm-hmm. I have that data at least. And then I have my payments data, what's working, what's not. Maybe my inventory, what's shifting, seasonality, all those kind of things. Yeah. Is there any other little low-lying fruit that I could look at?
Yeah, well, what we would say is that probably the low-lying fruit is that the data needs to be brought together, because a lot of times people, they do their Google Analytics separately, then they look at their social media, then they look at their sales, and they look at their CRM system. And our perspective is, actually, you need to bring all this data together so I can understand, okay, exactly, not in an approximate way, but exactly how does my experience of my Google Analytics and the experience on the website percolate through to CRM issues? You know, does it cause a spike on my call center if I have a problem? Is there something that I'm a product that I launch, is that causing either churn or additional uptake? And you need to bring everything together. And we find that most companies, they have loads of data and you have different people. He's very good at Google Analytics. He's very good at looking after sales, but they're not joined up.
Yeah.
And that's where we encourage a lot of companies to go, join up all your data. Then you can see the big picture. Because if you're looking at silos of data, you're missing an awful lot of detail.
Yeah. And where can people find you, Aidan?
Just at our website, www.idiro.com. That's IDIRO. We're based in Dublin City Centre. And just go onto our website and all the contact information is there.
Brilliant. Okay, well, Aidan Connolly, CEO and founder of Idiro Analytics, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Aidan.